This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
It is 7:44. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Joining us for the Israel Report this morning, Jonathan Feldstein. He's founder of Genesis 123 Foundation. Jonathan, good morning. Shavua Tov. How are you?
Good morning. Excuse me. Good morning and Shavua Tov to you. How are you? How's your trip?
The trip is very interesting. Jonathan, the one thing I've observed, and maybe it's in my own mind, but I find that people here are much more vulnerable, much more real. They actually greet you when you walk past them in the street on a Shabbat, whereas in the past, I feel like you either are invisible or could drop down in front of them and nobody would notice. Is that in my own mind, or is there a real move towards a little bit of vulnerability, noticing each other and human connection?
Well, I think that what you might be seeing is the increased sense of solidarity that even despite the friction that we have, and there's plenty of it, that there's a greater sense of solidarity. You know, yesterday I was in a taxi in Tel Aviv, and it's just very easy to strike up a conversation with people do that anyway with taxi drivers. But I think I don't know if it's vulnerability or a sense of unity.
It's either way, it's very positive. Yeah. I actually find that there's a warmth here that I haven't felt really for a number of years.
Yeah, you're right. And even with the differences, that's the thing, is that we can be coming from the right and the left and religious and secular and Arab and Jewish and still be more civil, more caring, less reflexively divisive.
Yeah, that's certainly the experience that I've had so far.
Good.
Let's talk about the hostage deal. Where are we? What happened over the weekend? Bring us up to speed.
Well, it's still no better a deal. We've still released hundreds more terrorists, and that's and these are ones now whose names. Actually, I'm doing a webinar. Anyone who wants to visit on Thursday morning, Israel and South Africa time, I'm doing a webinar with two lawyers who bring terrorists and their financiers to justice. But we're seeing the names of the terrorists and the names of the victims and how many people they've killed. So that's still incredibly divisive. But again, and I think we talked about it right before Shabbat, is that, you know, as soon as my Shabbat ended, TV went on because we wanted to see and make sure that the three men who were slated to be released have been, and they were, thank God for that. And you can't stop crying. You can't stop being choked up and celebrating all of that with the hope that there's more. But I think this one was different because Yarden Bibas was released, and we still don't know publicly the status of his wife and two little boys, who would be 2 and 4 now. And that's creating grief and tension. And, you know, I put myself in his shoes. You're a father. I'm a father. If God forbid we were to be in that situation, I think the thing that would hold us most sane for 484 days of captivity would be dreaming of being with our family again. And he came back to his wife and children still missing, unaccounted for, dead or alive, we don't know. His in-laws dead, and I don't know how he'll go on from this. I don't know.
How you put one foot in front of the other. It's remarkable. Do you think they know? I saw that there was a statement that the family are going to talk to the press or release comments today. Is it thought that they know what the situation is with his wife and children?
I have to believe it, because the things I hear from my sons in the army and son-in-law, and yesterday We went to deliver some fabulous supplies at a military base that people donated from the Genesis 123 Foundation. People are speaking so confidence, not the right word. I don't know what the right word is. Let's go with confident. That Shiri and Fear and Ariel, the boys, are not alive. I know from speaking to certain people that there is intelligence, not specifically on them, but on the status of hostages anyway. And what if they know or don't know? We do what we do know is Yarden was tormented during his captivity, being told that his wife and children were killed. So I don't know how public they'll go with that. If that, even if they do know it. And yesterday I heard some things that I don't want to speak about on air, but some things that were particularly grotesque that those who are in the know and are not yet public, but the families will reveal what they want to reveal when they want to reveal it, or conversely not.
Wouldn't they have had to have been released by now in terms of the deal? In other words, if they haven't been released as a woman and children, then surely that says a lot.
Yes, the terms of the deal were that women and children, including the female soldiers, were to be released first. And the fact that Shiri and Kfir and Ariel have not been released, dead or alive, certainly underscores the probability, the likelihood that maybe they're not alive. And I haven't published it yet. It's funny, you always get me in the ahead of the curve, but an article coming about the hostages and how the grotesqueness of the spectacle of their release each time. One has to imagine, whether it's with the rest of the Bibas family or the 10 known hostages to be released who are not alive, how are they going? How will Hamas conduct these gross spectacles with human corpses? So it'll be really bad press for them, and maybe that's deliberate because today or tomorrow is the 16th day of since the deal went into effect, and we're now supposed to begin negotiations toward a second and final phase. And maybe they just want to ride the wave of looking as good and as evil as possible before things get too out of hand and they lose whatever wind they have in the sail. I don't know what the calculation is, but I do know, I can't tell how, but I do know the tone will change here significantly when bodies start coming back.
There's no doubt, no doubt. So, what is therefore the fate of the ceasefire hostage deal?
We're supposed to be negotiating toward toward the second phase, and that second phase, in theory, we'll see the release of the remaining 65 who are not on a list currently, but who are still believed to be in captivity. We have to say that because Hamas in 485 or 86 days has still not presented a whole list of who they've taken captive. And that's also supposed to lead toward a permanent ceasefire and Israeli evacuation from Gaza, or at least the majority of Gaza and populated areas. If that will go forward, how that will go forward, what the political consequences. And we have to remember that today in Washington, the prime minister is supposed to meet with Stephen Witkoff, the president's advisor. I think today is the day that that's supposed to begin. So technically, conversations are being had in parallel. And tomorrow he's having a conversation with President Trump. But what will be and will be a function of many, many pressures on many different levels.
It seems to be an absurdity that there's even a concept that Gaza will be rebuilt with Hamas still in power, because we know what's going to happen to the money.
Well, not just the money, but the terror. I don't know. You won't recognize it. I haven't published it yet, but we're about to release an image from the 1960s Vietnam War era. There was a beautiful poster and card made that says, "War is not healthy for children and other living things." We've adapted that, at Genesis 1:2-3. It's going to come out in the next day. Changed it into orange because of the B-Bus boys being beautiful redheads. And it now says Hamas is not healthy for children and other living things. But Hamas, we have to remember that Hamas is not just dangerous for Israel and the Jewish people, but for all Gazans and for people who actually really want peace and to see the opportunity. And there are so many of us. I had a conversation with a number of soldiers yesterday on this base, and I told them about my Solution for Peace in Gaza.com plan to bring Christians to rebuild Gaza. And you could see their eyes roll up in the air and the epiphany that they had, because even soldiers in the positions that these young and some not so young men are serving really want peace. And we really are looking for that. So what will be in the second phase and if this even goes, and leaving Hamas in place, which is completely unthinkable and counter to the goals of the war, which was to eliminate Hamas and bring home mobile hostages, neither of which we've done yet.
So what is the main point then in Netanyahu's conversation with Donald Trump?
They haven't sent me a briefing on it, so I don't know.
Well, that's rude.
I know. They're so inconsiderate, because they knew I was having this conversation with you.
Exactly.
And you were going to ask that question. I apologize on their behalf to all your listeners. I hope, I don't know, Howard, but I hope that it has something to do with eliminating the Islamic regime in Iran. Coincidentally, a week from today is the anniversary, the 46th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution there. I pray that this is the last year we ever allow Islamic terrorists like this to even be in power in Iran. If you think about it, if they want to see real change and they want to see peace with the Saudis and they want to see an end to Islamic extremism that threatens Israel, but the whole world, then we have to deal with the head of the octopus. And I don't know. Again, I didn't get the memo, but my hope of hopes is that that's the plan that they're really talking about. And then, which honestly makes Gaza secondary, because once the head of this octopus and the financing for all of their tentacles dry up, then we see a new world order remade where people have to choose something different and hopefully positive.
And how significant is Saudi Arabia in all of this?
Saudi Arabia is very significant. Saudi Arabia is the most significant, most influential, most wealthy of the Arab states. And of course, as the, I forget the term they use, the protectors of Mecca and Medina, their holy sites for Sunni and Shiite. And the conventional wisdom is that they have wanted a normalization relationship with Israel for some time, but they're stuck on having made a declaration in 2002 that there needs to be a Palestinian state. Clearly that's not happening. So the Saudis have to walk that back a little bit, and Trump has to sweeten the pot. But hopefully that will also be without a nuclear Iran, or an Iran that's not striving for nuclear weapons, so the Saudis don't think that they also have to have nuclear weapons, because the Saudis also know that the Iranians are no less a threat to Saudi Arabia than they are to Israel. Just we're the first target.
A short while ago, Trump floated this idea of the Palestinians or Gazans moving to Jordan, moving to Egypt. Is this still on the agenda as far as we know?
It's being talked about quite a bit. Is it realistic? Is it practical? And will it actually do anything in the big picture? No, it shakes up the conversation to not just reflexively have a two-state solution and rebuild as is, to have another war and destruction in 5, 10, 15, or 20 years, or all of those. So the fact that Trump is shaking up the conversation is honestly similar to my Solution for Peace in Gaza that we've been promoting for the last year, because we have to think out of the box. But moving 1.5 million Gazans out of Gaza doesn't change the reality that you'd still have 1 to 1.5 million Gazans who are prone to hate us as jihadi Muslims. And And so what if only 10% act on it? That's 150,000 instead of 300,000. Big deal.
It also exports a Hamas-driven propaganda and education to other parts of the Middle East, which
Which
surely
will
would be
threaten,
a problem.
right, which will threaten those countries, which will threaten Egypt and will threaten Jordan especially, and if they were exported to other places, or South Africa or to Norway or to Ireland, those entertain me to send hardened Palestinian Arab terrorists to these countries that have been so hostile to Israel. That's actually very entertaining, but none of that creates a solution. It just shuffles the deck.
Right, and it really is just it's almost an instant gratification thing. Is it's almost like now, okay, now you'll understand what Israel's been dealing with. But that really doesn't make it a smart solution. It just gives a quick win, really.
Correct, but I'm all in occasionally for instant gratification.
That is where we leave it. I'd love your thoughts. 0618951019. That was Jonathan Feldstein bringing us the Israel Report this morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.